on rural policy to order here on the 23rd of January, 08. And before we get started, we might as well just do quick introductions and let people know where people are. So are you aren't on mute yet, are you?
I am not, and I'm Phil Barnhart, Chair of Benedy from House District 11.
I'm Jean Cowan, House District 10.
Fred Gerard, House District 17.
And Arnie Roblund from House District 9. So today we have a few things, and our first one is an informational meeting, and there are two of us who actually are on this other group, but we would love to have an update on the Governor's Task Force on Federal Forest Payments and County Services with Tim. And I haven't heard a problem, but we always get this feedback. So if you have a cell phone on, Representative Gerard reminded the rest of us to turn ours off, so it was nice.
Always nice when someone else is.
Okay, I had mine on silent, but I'll turn it off.
Mr.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tim Nesbitt. I'm Deputy Chief of Staff for the Governor. And with me is Mike MacArthur from the Association of Oregon Counties, and we'd like to give you exactly what you asked for, an update on what we're doing in regard to the county payments crisis, and in particular the task force established by the governor last November. That action was taken by the governor after the failure of the Congress and the administration to agree on or authorize a continuation of federal forest payments for the current fiscal year. And we also saw what just a delay in reauthorization meant to our counties in the previous fiscal year. A lot of damage was done simply by the delay we experienced there. And we got a glimpse of what the impacts of the loss of this magnitude of funding could mean. And we're talking about $230 million a year, or $460 million biennium. That's 3% of the state budget. But it's 12% of all county budgets statewide and above 50% in some counties. 28% of all county road funds statewide. So these are impacts that far exceed the magnitude of what you dealt with in the state's 2001-2003 recession, and kind of unimaginable in their consequences. Obviously, the first priority is to work with our congressional delegation and members of Congress and the administration to achieve a reauthorization of federal forest payments in the current fiscal year and beyond, if possible. We have been caught up not only in politics generally, but the specific politics around the pay-go or pay-as-you-go requirements at the federal level, except now that there's fear of a recession and this talk of an economic stimulus package, everyone's saying the economic stimulus package will be exempt from the pay-go requirements, so this is a unique opportunity. With that legislation advancing, to perhaps get a reauthorization of federal forest payments in that legislation, which is what we've turned our attention to in the current week. Our delegation in the House is pursuing a one-year reauthorization in the stimulus package. Our senators are pursuing a multi-year. Either strategy, if successful, would give us some breathing room here. But again, the governor created this task force to deal with the possibility that we could have another year of delay, that we're not assured of any continuation of funding as of this moment, and so we need to be prepared for the worst, either short term or long term. With that, I think it would be good if Mike MacArthur could give you a little more of an update on the picture out there in the counties. And then I'll bring it back and close with an idea, with a presentation on what we're doing in the task force for both short-term and long-term solutions.
Okay. Thank you, Tim. Mike MacArthur, the Association of Oregon Counties. Good morning. Chair Roblund, Representative Cowan, Representative Gerard, Representative Barnhart. Good morning. First of all, I wanted to express my appreciation to the governor for the executive order and for the attention given by the governor's office to this issue, particularly Mr. Nesbitt's engagement here has been very helpful, and I think we're embarked on a path that will at least shed a lot of light on the possible shortcomings that we're facing in the county world and public services that the citizens come to depend on that won't be there. I also like to express my appreciation to this committee and all of you individually for your efforts and attention to this, particularly the field trip we took to Eastern Oregon and Mr. Representative Barnhart's trip to Southwestern Oregon. For your enlightenment this morning, we've produced the latest version of the county federal force permits document. You'll see it has a date on it because every time we print it, it's updated. And I think if you'll look at these pages, about 10 pages here with colored maps, what these illustrate are the impacts on county, and Representative Barnhart will get you a copy of this. It impacts the county general funds. If you look at that chart, you'll see that those counties in red will have a greater than 60% loss from their general fund if these funds go away. And one of the vexing problems with this issue is that counties will say there's no certainty. Well, in my view, there is certainty. The certainty is that this sorts of funding is going away sooner or later. The long political struggle we've had for reauthorization has taught us that it's very, very difficult to get support nationally for a program that's so beneficial locally. So it's our view that these funds are most likely going away, just a matter of time. But were they to go away immediately, you'll see the counties in red, that's where it hits hardest. First, green, blue, and then yellow. And then if you turn the page, you'll see the road impacts, and those are more widespread across the state. So counties are building their budgets as we speak, and given the uncertainty of last year and the bleak political picture, I think you'll find counties planning to live without these funds. If the funds come, they'll be placed into capital projects or one-time expenditures. I think some counties are continue to consider at least local measures, but so far the voters have not been very cooperative, and with the uncertainty around federal funding, it's very difficult to do. With that, I think I'd like to mention a couple other things that have to do with the Federal Force Payments Task Force, but Tim, do you want to talk about the plan?
We have a question.
Sure.
Actually, after looking at your map, now here it doesn't have any impact, and I just was curious how they managed to do that. Is it just lack of timber?
There's particularly no particular forest receipts in Malheur County.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
But it's Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Gerard, one of the interesting side impacts of all this is the PILT funding. Payment in lieu of taxes is a national program, and everyone is in all counties that have public lands get a portion of that. For instance, even little old Sherman County gets $90,000 a year because of BLM lands. So when the federal force payments formula is related to the PILT formula, so when the federal force payments go away, those counties will dip further into the PILT pot. So, in other words, those funds will be diluted nationwide, so everybody will get less. So, Malheur County would get less from their PILT funding as a result of federal forest payments going away. Representative Cowan,
trying to track that.
Okay. There are two programs: payment in lieu of taxes and the secure rural schools.
Right.
Okay. If you get secure rural schools, you get less PILT.
Oh, okay.
Because the PILT formula is tied back to timber receipts.
Okay.
So if there is no federal forest payments from secure rural schools, then there are more folks eligible for PILT. And so that dilutes that particular source of funding.
Okay. You probably just had to say that twice to get it through.
And I think one of the counties that we visited, Union or Grant, mentioned that because that we would lose the money here, our PILT payments would actually go up because they would be losing the other, but their PILT would go up a little bit, so there was a little bit of a bump. Not much, but I mean it was not as much as they were losing on the other side, but yeah. Okay. Representative Cowan.
I was
I understand I'm paraphrasing someone else's question, and I want to lay that out here ahead. You know me better than to think this is mine. But I was in a public forum recently, and I was trying, apparently not real successfully, to explain that these kinds of challenges affected counties differently across the state because of different structures. And the part about dependency on the forest lands and public ownership seemed to get lost in that conversation. And one question was put to me, well, you know, is there a exemplary way of doing it that we should all be looking to that all counties would be better off? So I think the challenge of explaining the dependency on public land ownership and those counties who don't have that dependency continues to be difficult for us out in the real world. And then there was a follow-up comment from an individual who was essentially charging that counties who are currently getting the federal forest receipts, some of them are socking it away inappropriately into reserves, and this is an individual who wanted to be quite challenging. But I particularly when you look at the impacts to county general funds and you see that a few counties are much harder hit than others, and that almost the majority of counties have impact their road funds. But could you maybe just elaborate for the record a little bit on the reasons for such a dramatic difference, and particularly the general fund impact? Am I making any sense here? I'm trying to get some better answers for people, I guess.
Chair Roblin, Representative Cowan, let me try, and you can redirect me if I'm off in the wrong direction. Certainly, as we'd like to say at county government, you've seen one county, you've seen one county. There are, even within the statutory framework that Oregon allows, many different ways of organizing counties and many different ways of planning and many dynamics that go into that. Certainly, some counties have been able to and been in a position to set some money aside to soften the glide path down, but essentially, the problem stems from there being in some counties, so little private land to work with. Interestingly enough, I just learned this the other day, that if you look at a map of the United States and that shows the county boundaries, when you get west of Nebraska, the number of counties is dramatically reduced per state. Mm-hmm. Nebraska, for instance, is about the size. Oregon has over 100 counties.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that the reason that was is Congress recognized that there would be far more public lands in these counties in the West. And so, therefore, counties should be larger so that they would have more private lands within their boundaries to be able to have some tax revenue and economic development from. So I think Congress and the federal government recognized the dynamic that we have here in the West of having large portions off the tax rolls, large portions undevelopable. Now, counties have come to depend on revenue from some of those federal lands, particularly the forested lands, particularly the ONC lands, which is the ONC in itself is a unique act in that it called for permanent management for timber production of those lands. Those lands were given to the railroad and taken back by the federal government, as you know. And so counties had a right to depend on some revenue from those federal lands because of the nature of the federal act. Well, that's not happening. And given the controversy about how we manage those lands, probably won't happen to any significant degree. So then they become their revenue source coming from either federal payments or timber harvest put them in a unique position when we pass property tax limitation measures. So now they find themselves in a box. And so we find that it's very difficult to provide the basic level of services if you're in a really low property tax rate or range that those red counties in the ONC are. I hope that helps, Representative Cowan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's one more contributing factor to that whole thing, and that is that not only did the federal government make policy that changed how they used those forest lands, the state of Oregon made public policy with respect to how we tax the private lands that are in most of those counties.
Sure.
which is where they get most of their revenues from property taxes. So we made a decision in this state that we would give exemptions to farm and forest lands. And almost all the private farm and forest land is in those same counties, and so there's very little fully taxable land in any of these counties. Is that not part of it as well?
Yeah, very good point, Representative Roblin. Yes.
Can I jump?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. This is might be jumping the gun, and maybe you want to deal with it later, but my phone's been ringing off the hook about the Whopper plan. And could you explain what that is and what the possibility of that going through and where that stands?
Chair Roblin, Representative DeGrada, let me try. The Western Oregon Plan Revision, the acronym you referred to, Whopper, it has to do with the ONC lands. And the BLM has a management plan for the ONC lands. And the counties and others have felt that that plan was inadequate based on the act, and so the court actually told BLM to rewrite the plan to be more consistent with the intent of the act. And the Whopper, Western Oregon Plan Revision, is BLM's proposed revision of the management plan for the ONC lands. And there are a number of alternatives, and alternative two, I think, is getting most of the attention right now, and they're taking comments, and then I think we'll come out with a preferred alternative. The alternative two calls for much more aggressive logging than we have now, which is what the suit was all about. But it still must comply with the Endangered Species Act, Clean Water Act, all the other acts that are there. The controversy over that, I think, is somewhat rooted in misunderstanding of the ONC Act itself and what its intent is, I think that this will no doubt only be resolved by the courts.
And it's my understanding that alternative two basically will get us to about 94% of where we were before. It won't get us the same amount of logging, and that only if we can actually harvest that timber, which that they're trying to do. It's a interesting. I don't know if that's the right number or not. I was just saying that it was the closest to what the counties felt of all the alternatives that would get them back where they were at.
Mr. Chair, I think other projections are based on what the harvest levels are now, and so not sure exactly what that 94% refers to, but I would say that our Department of Forestry and the Board of Forestry has a Federal Forest Committee is working in cooperation with BLM, and we've submitted comments. The governor submitted comments a week or so ago, which Mike has a copy of, and we can provide copies to you if you like, and we'll be doing that actually at our next task force meeting. There's no doubt we believe that there is capacity for increased harvest from these lands that is consistent with sustainable timber practices and the protection of water and habitat that are acknowledged in federal law and in state law. How much of an increase, wouldn't hazard a guess, but we would definitely assure you that we support an increase that's consistent with those principles, and we think it's achievable. And in fact, we think that's a component of the long-term solution here for the counties. What the Department of Forestry would tell you is that their guess is maybe 20% of the revenue loss we're looking at now could be recovered from sustainable harvest above the level we have now. So that's kind of the contribution to the long-term solution that we think lies in this area.
And along with that recovery of that money coming from the harvest tax, you would also have more jobs in those counties.
That's correct.
That would actually add to the county as well. Well, more to the state with respect to that.
If I may, just to continue the presentation, what you see in the task force and those of you participating saw it in our first meeting, this is really a all-hands-on-deck response from the governor to all of the state agencies involved with the counties and the delivery of services that we need to work together to solve this problem. This is not a local government problem. This is not a county problem. This is a statewide problem, and it's a state's problem as well. And so that's reflected, as you see, in the membership of the task force, which we've shared with you. And I want to emphasize this is a task force. It's not a committee. We're not going to just study things and put them on the shelf. We're going to bring you recommendations, short-term and long-term, short list and long list, for how we can mitigate these impacts, how we can actually, to some extent, you know, give value to the truism that crisis is opportunity. We're going to be looking with increased focus now at how we share service delivery and the financing of services between the state and counties. We know there are a lot of opportunities out there where we can identify improvements and bring them back to you. And some of them are maybe achievable through administrative action within the budget we have now, so we don't necessarily need to come back to you for statutory changes. So we'll be looking at the whole range of actions where we can help to mitigate the burden on the counties, streamline service delivery to the mutual advantage of the state and the counties. One example might be in the law enforcement area, when we meet in Grants Pass next Tuesday, the sheriffs and Superintendent McLean and other members of the Oregon State Police will be talking about a range of things, including the medical examiner currently funded in Southern Oregon by some counties. Could the state police take over that? Superintendent McLean will tell you, yes, he thinks they can. In about 5 minutes, the human services work groups will be convening across the way at AOC's offices, and they'll be looking at all kinds of ways to streamline the reporting requirements and the relationship in terms of the service delivery between cities and between counties and the state in those important areas: mental health, public health, developmental, disabled services, senior services, etc. So there's a range of opportunity here as well to do things better. There'll be a lot of little solutions as well as a look through a policy group called the Revenue Work Group at the longer-term solutions that will probably involve addressing the limitations which now exist in our state constitution on local property taxes, i.e. what Measure 47 and 50 created, as well as the Federal Forest Practices effort to see if in three to five-year time frame we can help get back to a level of harvest activity and financing for the counties from that source as well. So, again, we'll be looking at short-term solutions that can be done right now in the interim through administrative actions. Others we may bring you in the 09 session, and even longer-term solutions that might require constitutional change or changes, again, in the federal forest practices, which, and where we can be helpful there, we will be.
Okay. Representative Cowan.
Thank you. Just a comment. I'd just like to say thank you to the governor and for this effort. I've been in local government for a long time, and a way long time ago when I was a small town mayor, I remember when there was a loss of the state shared revenues that we had been accustomed to between local governments and the states, and really didn't fully appreciate at the time what that was going to mean long term. But then as a county commissioner who was actively involved in developing these cute little charts about shared services that we've been putting in front of people's faces for more years than I can really count, to hear shared services come from you and talking really seriously about how we might be able to work together more effectively, that makes me glad to be here and glad to see that conversation taking place.
And if I might add, yes, we appreciate the work that's been done by LFO. Is it called the 5530 project? 5520 project in two phases, where they've been identifying the shared services and are about to release, I think, yet another report, which Mike's kind of working with LFO on right now.
Thanks, Tim. If I may, Chair Roland, members of the committee, call your attention to the pie charts in the back of the report. During the 2005 session, we had this conversation with the co-chairs of Ways and Means about trying to identify where the revenues all came from to provide these services. And so we embarked on a project we call 5520, which looked at county expenditures, state expenditures in eight different areas of public services during that '03-'05 biennium. We're attempting to update those pie charts and the work for the 2005-2007 biennium. The counties have done our part, which is to compile the county revenues in these same areas, and now we're working with LFO to develop the state's contribution. And then LFO actually produced these charts. So we're hoping this tool can be used by the Federal Forest Payments Task Force just to give us a more accurate picture of where things are now and how they changed from the 03-05 biennium to the 05-07 biennium. So we appreciate LFO's support and cooperation in this project.
And I'll just make a comment as well. I think that, you know, when we got our dramatic wake-up call the last time that this reauthorization was happening, and a number of counties started having the real discussions, especially the ones that we saw that were in the 50% and above range with respect to their general funds, that they couldn't continue to do some of those at all, and they were going to give back certain fields to the state and just say, it's yours, we can't do public health, we can't do these things because we have no extra money at all. And so even trying to deal with it was something we can't do. And at least one of those counties was looking at what is the statutory ability for us to declare bankruptcy. How do we go under? Because the sight of looking at that. And when we recognized that it was a much smaller portion of the state budget in the 01-03 biennium, and we came back for all those multiple sessions to kind of keep doing it, and it was painful each time we came back. And these counties are looking at something that is hard to imagine how big it's going to be. So I agree that this task force is the way to go, and I still want to make sure that people really understand. I am one of those people who truly believes that the federal government has an obligation here, and I think all the people on these committees also believe that obligation exists from the federal government. And so we need to hold them to that obligation, but we also need to be ready, and I think that's what this task force is about. If they don't hold up their end of the bargain, we do have citizens that live in all these counties that need to have some of these services provided. So thank you. Any other questions?
No, it's pretty straightforward.
Any other comments?
No, thank you.
Well, again, thank you very much, and look forward. I think your group is meeting again next week.
A week from Thursday, January 31st. Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So,
okay. So yes. How long is this meet? How long are we going to meet here?
Today?
Yeah.
Depends on how quick you are. 15, 20 more minutes.
Well, no, I just want to have another committee.
That's right.
I was just kind of curious.
I think we're going to be able to make part of our other committees.
Really?
Me as well.
Oh, all right. I hear you have to introduce
I have
a bill.
Education committee as well, yes.
Yeah.
Right. The next end, we're going to open a public hearing and possible work session.
There's a gentleman.
Oh. Bill, you want to come and say a few words to this last one?
Is it on these two?
No, it's on the federal forest monies, correct? Bill? Do you want to address the last people's comments?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Chair Roblin, committee for the record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters Industrial Council. I represent thousands of people here in the state of Oregon. No sense looking back. In 2003, 2005, and 2007, I hand-delivered in everybody's inbox exactly what ONC funding meant. Last session, I only had two phone calls asking me, what's this mean? We all know what we're looking at. What can we do about it? You heard the two speakers here. We're kind of handcuffed. Looking back, and it's still not too late, one thing that would help, if we could, you know, tax credits for businesses, I got mixed feelings about quite a bit of that, but if it creates a job, if it keeps a job, we have to do it. If we could keep our logs and chips at home, we've lost quite a few mills, quite a few jobs with our logs going overseas. And now China's in the market for our chips. On the radio going home last night, our trade deficit with China today is $250 billion. They're more worried about our recession than what we are. Because that's what they live on. It's what they sell to us. Immediately we need to get into our state forest where our blowdowns were from the previous winter storm and start chipping that stuff. We're not going to be able to salvage very many logs, but we need to save them chips for our paper mills that are right there in the area. I made a trip over to Elgin LeGrand. We went to, up to Joseph. That mill closed 18 years ago, and then people still miss that mill. Mm-hmm. What's happened over there now? A year ago when I was in Elgin LeGrand, they were out of logs, completely out of logs. Today, their log decks are full. That sounds good, except those logs are coming in from Canada, Washington, and Idaho. And statistics will show they've overcut their private lands in this state. What that means now, instead of the 40-year cycle, which they had put their programs together with years ago, they're cutting 25-year cycle now. Where's the logs going to come from 15 years from now that they're sawing today? Because our federal forests are basically down. I urge this committee to look at the BLM proposal. It doesn't put us exactly where we were, but at 90%, we can get by. For 2 years, I was on the biomass, the governor's biomass group. Not much has moved forward. The plans are all in place, but right there is jobs that we could create, especially in these eastern and southwest counties, and produce electricity as our new laws mandate for renewable energy. There's a lot of lawsuits out there. Luckily, we live in a country where we can file appeals and lawsuits. But more and more folks, or congressional folks, are realizing that that does not give a person the right for a 5-year appeal or a 5-year court fight when those things can be taken care of within 6 months. Nobody wants to bid on, when they do put a federal timber sale up, nobody wants to bid on it because they know they're going to wind up in court, whether it's from a local group or from New Hampshire. The suits come from all over. It's a game to them. We need to look at the roadless area that was created. Nowhere in that roadless area does it say no more roads, or you cannot go in and salvage. But that's the way it's been turned. In fact, it says you can create a road in a roadless area.
Bill, can I interrupt?
Yeah.
Yes.
I got a couple of questions for you. One is, I sit on Economic Development Committee, and we talked about the Vernonia storm and how much blowdown there was and the salvage that was involved. I also was on with Arnie and Representative Cowan on a tour of the counties, and it was brought up that there was cogeneration, mobile cogeneration operations, but they couldn't guarantee the purchase of their power. Have you heard anything about that, or wasn't that a John Day that we heard mm-hmm. that?
Chair Roblin, Representative Girard, yes. The problem is, and we're working through that, is when you start to sell power, you got to guarantee that that power will be coming 24 hours a day. It's hard to get a bank to finance a $20 million unit when you don't have a steady supply of guaranteed biomass material. We're working on that. When we set one of these up, we have to have 24 hours a day power output. We got to have a steady supply of fuel. And if a lawsuit stops that, everybody is hurt. Our vision is, when you set one of these up, you can work in a 50-mile radius, and the time you complete that whole circle, we're looking at 20 years. Hopefully we get through these bumps in the road. Lakeview is in the process of starting theirs up. And when you look at, you know, for Lakeview, that's 75 jobs right there. Good paying jobs. Hopefully we can get over those hurdles.
One other follow-up question. I was actually talking to a representative down for breakfast this morning, Schaffler, and he was saying there's a poll out that shows that 70% of the public want to harvest fire-parched timber and allow the harvest of that with the replantation of that, which is against federal policy right now. Is there anything that you think that maybe the legislature could get involved in changing that policy so we can replant and harvest after a forest fire?
I can show you an example of a lawsuit. Luckily, it does affect this state because we were planning on getting logs out of that sale. It's school fire in southeast Washington. That logging got stopped, that salvage, because if a tree has one green limb, it's clear at the top, and all the rest of those limbs are scorched off and burnt, the environmental groups file suit that you can't cut that tree. So you got to go off and leave it. And basically, that shut that whole sale down. Yes, our federal forests are in tough shape. Tough shape. And there again, some of the environmental groups, 72 talks about roads. There's a lot of talk from the environmental groups that they want a vast majority of these federal forest roads taken out. And anybody that looks at our ownership maps of our forest in Oregon, they're all interlaced. State, BLM, U.S. Forest. And if you take a strip of road out, that affects the roads on both ends of it. I've been working on that problem for the last 2 or 3 years. I hope that answered your question.
It does.
Another thing we could look at, we need to really emphasize the importance of the Port of Coos Bay.
Are you
and
sure
we
about that?
We need to get that process online. We need a new railroad. We're talking hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of construction alone. And on top of that, at least 10,000 direct jobs. And that's going to help every county in a roundabout way, because the people that's moving out of our counties that can't help themselves anymore, at least there'll be a job in Coos Bay. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
I think we're okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And just a note before we go on, I was at SARL, which is the all the ag committee chairs, vice chairs if you want, but it's a national ag meeting that takes place in, this year it was in St. Louis, and I saw for the first time the plans for a fully operational, full-scale cellulosic ethanol plant in Georgia that is being built as we speak. They believe they have the process down, ready to go. I don't know, it'll be a few more years before it's done. They have had a practice one going, and they are going to use the biomass from the pine forests. They said the plant can handle just about anything, from switchgrass to whatever. And this is true. They believe they can produce it at cheaper than the... They can make money on the current barrel of oil. Actually, they could have made it on it before it was the current price. Mm-hmm. So they are feeling very good about the prospects and would like, I think, to have that in other places. And it was another clear indication why we have a problem. They are putting these in Georgia and southeast because most of the forests there are privately owned.
Oh, wow.
And therefore, they can get a constant supply of the biomass that they need from the scraps and stuff that's left over. Whereas out here, it's difficult because the contracts they're going to need are going to have to come off biomass in federal forests to make it work for them. So,
Mr. Chair, I'd like to just throw out a little comment in that I find it really ironic that we, in the federal forest, that we can't harvest our biomass predicated on from the environmental standpoint. But if you look at what a fire produces and how much carbon dioxide is emitted into the air, it seems to me like we'd be preventing environmental catastrophes if we were able to harvest some of the biomass. And I concur with you that it just seems like a way that we need to go.
And I think that if you actually look at all of the things produced in a catastrophic fire, it's not just the carbon dioxide. There are heavy metals and other kinds of stuff that we have an issue with as well. So, with that, we will, unless I hear anyone else that wants to say something about our county point payments. Seeing none, we'll move to a public hearing and possible work session to request introduction of legislative concepts, number 72. So, if you'll look at the two concepts we have up here. And I want to express to people that these hearings are also an opportunity for people to understand what's going on, and that these pieces of legislation, because this is kind of a new thing, our special session coming up, we will be having hearings on these, hopefully starting fairly early in the session, so we can get on with things, and that this is a part of that whole process, is to make sure that the public and others understand these concepts that we're talking about. So we'll start with LC 72. So, a short explanation by our administrator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, LC 72 will be a resolution, and this comes from your last discussion at the last meeting about wanting to talk about transportation and the importance of transportation funding in rural counties. So, after conversation with the chair and some others, we decided to, instead of print a bill, go for a resolution, just expressing support for continued conversation and more inclusive conversation about transportation funding.
When we had our last meeting, we talked about, you know, how do we get to a place where the distribution of those receipts is a difficult conversation, and both county and others came and talked to us and said, I don't know that we have the time to get that done, but we certainly need to continue to push on figuring out how distribution of funds for county roads and others are going to happen if, in fact, we have the loss of those funds through the federal government's failure to reauthorize. So this is an point just to keep pushing that level on us as a state that, and to our revenue people, that we have to have real conversations if, in fact, the federal government doesn't reauthorize. And if they do reauthorize, we recognize that that will be a short-term solution, and we're going to have to come back and revisit the issue of how important county roads are to the total infrastructure for our state at some point. So that's kind of what it's about.
Do you need a motion?
We do.
Mr. Chair, I move that LC 72 be sent for a draft or for
introduced as a committee bill.
Introduced as a committee bill.
Okay. Representative Girardos moves that we request LC 72 be introduced to the committee bill during the February 08 session. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I simply wanted to note that I have reviewed the LC draft. I think it's an excellent idea. I support completely the things that you've said in support of the resolution. And I intend to vote in favor of it.
Thank you very much. Any other discussion? Seeing none, is there any objections?
That was not an objection.
Okay. Seeing no objections, it's so ordered. And now we will close that public hearing and work session, and we'll move on to a public hearing and possible work session on legislative concept number 72.
83.
Thank you. And we'll have a short description.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, LC 83 is actually a memorial to Congress. Again, it is expressing support for rural Oregonians and also urging extension and reauthorization of the county payments fund. And it looks like Bill Cluding was actually trying to testify on LC 83 when he was up here.
Oh, okay.
There you go. And in your packet, you'll also see that we have some written testimony from John Griffith that was emailed to Representative Roblin. His last full paragraph just gives you an idea of some other possibilities for the language.
And I don't know, did you get a copy? Did we email that to you?
Yes.
Representative Barnhart?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Email that I had gotten from John Griffith, our county commissioner, with regard to this LC 83.
I don't know whether I received that or not.
It was at the bottom of the email I sent you yesterday afternoon.
That I have received.
Okay.
And
yes, I do have it. Thanks.
Okay. And what Commissioner Griffith is talking about on this particular one is that he would really like to see some actually stronger language to recognize to people that from the county's perspective, at least from Coos County's perspective, it is the actual harvesting more of that timber that is important for the whole community and make it a more viable community. That we're talking about more jobs, not just the income that's coming in, and that, you know, we need to continue to work for those solutions, not only the payments in lieu of taxes, but that when you want to have a community that's vibrant and going, you also need to have an economy, and that economy is oftentimes based on, in our rural communities, natural resources. And so there's more to it than just this money, and that we continue to understand that. And I guess from my perspective, I think I am in the opinion that we should move that on to our legislative and we can have that conversation actually more and see if there's other things that we want. But I just wanted to make sure that so people read this over and look at it, and if we have a decision that during session we want to put an amendment or some other kind of thing into the deal, that we could do that, but we need to move it ahead. So that's kind of where I'm at. So any other discussions on...
Just a response to that. I'd also like to hear from AOC.
Exactly. That's what kind of my opinion as well.
On the subject of changing any language. So I agree with you. We should keep it moving and then talk more about amendments.
Mr. Chair and Representative Cowan, we did float the original language to AOC, and they did strengthen some of the language in LC 83. But I think, you know, if they reflect on the comments from John Griffith, maybe they would have additional comments.
Thank you.
Need a motion?
Yes.
I move that we request LC 83 be introduced as a committee bill during the February 2008 session.
Gerard moves that we request LC 83 to be introduced as a committee bill during the February 2008 session. Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Simply to note that I have reviewed the LC draft, and I am in agreement with the remarks already made by the chair.
Okay, any other discussion? Seeing none, any objections? Seeing no objections, so moved, and we will send that off to be drafted for our session. I guess we're done with the order of business, so I may close that.
I have a question about that same committee
one.
Direction.
Okay, let me close okay. this first. I will close the public hearing and work session on LC 83. And now, general discussion about where we're going. Representative Cowan.
Thank you. I'd like a feel from the chair about the regional rural investment program that we've talked about some and our support for a continuation of that.
Yes.
I wondered if you've thought about any methodologies. I continue to be in receipt of letters from various.
Yeah, we have, as you know, our committee already sent a letter to Ways and Means encouraging that, and also the Rural Policy Governor's Office to be continued as well.
Mm-hmm.
I know that last week we had a meeting of the Emergency Board, and I have not gotten the finals of all that. We will bring it to our committee, and we will follow through with that because I think we need to continue to do that. Another issue that I think during the February session that we will talk about and we'll invite the counties to come has to do with an issue that came up while we were on those discussions about, and I think it was Representative Kellen that kind of pushed a little bit on it, was the whole idea that we need the counties they represent all the counties, and there gets to be conflicts at times, and they don't recognize and give us the information we need about how a particular piece of legislation is going to impact a rural county as opposed to an urban county with the implementation, and that we need to be clear and understand some of those things. And so we're going to have at least a discussion during the session in our committee and ask people to come and talk to us about how do we have better quick time response for bills that are introduced. And I think you had a couple in the health issues last time, that it would have been great to have had information about what's that, how is that going to affect these rural counties, how are they going to be able to implement that, and can we in fact engineer the bill so that they can actually do what we're trying to do, and understanding the kind of extra concerns that they might have in those small counties. And we heard that repeatedly on our trip.
Mr. Chair, to kind of double back on that, Representative Riley and the GATE committee has a plain language bill that we're working on. It might be something that you could do a marriage with in the future session, a plain language, and then also have that as how it impacts within the whole state. And so it's a little bit of a reach, but I think that the two would be married very well.
Tomorrow. In the House Government Accountability Information Technology Committee tomorrow, we will be getting a brief update about how the plain language bill is moving along and what the plans are in the agencies.
I understand your point, but I just would like to emphasize that my concerns are much broader than it simply being understandable language. I want better opportunity to understand the impacts of the implementation of good ideas that can be very different between urban and rural areas. And as you said, we certainly had some examples of that brought to us up close and personal during our tour.
And the other thing I will say is that this State Agriculture Leaders conference that I went to last week, there were two resolutions that were passed that are going to be letters sent to our national delegations, actually come back to our ag meetings and other committee chairs to look at. And they really have to do with rural policy, about how it affects. And I will have copies of those. We amended it on the floor at this meeting, and therefore we don't have actual copies. But during the session, I'll bring some of that material to you as well. So you can see kind of the we are not alone in this rural discussions that are taking place, and how we go about helping our state recognize the differences. And then, really, I think the biggest issue is, how do we get an economy back into these rural areas where the natural resources are so important? How do we continue to build jobs and make these places the livable places we want? And that will be a part of what we're talking about as well. So, any other discussions before we...
I don't think so. Thanks.
Well, I'd just like to make a comment, and that is, I've really... love this committee, and it's been fun working with the chair and Representative Cowan. There is a possibility that this might be my last committee meeting. That's still a possibility. I just want to express my appreciation and my enjoyment of this committee.
Thank you very much, and good luck in any of the things you pursue. So
it might just be an interesting conversation to raise with leadership in both houses, that perhaps a joint committee on these kinds of subjects might be
in the future might be
something that we could get a lot of mileage out of.
And we'd be willing to recommend over there people who might be on it from the Senate side. With that, seeing no further discussion, we will adjourn the House Interim Committee on Rural Policy. Thank you all.